Raised Rowdy.
All right, well, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. I am Nick Tressler.
And I am Matt Braille, filling in. Kurt Ozon will be home eventually. We promise he will be back overseas.
I think he's in London. I don't know.
I think they're doing Wembley. I think they're at like O2 or one of those big Luke Combs size arenas.
Yeah, he sent me like a picture of the stage, and I was like, not a bad office for the day, buddy. Yeah. But he'll be back, and he is honestly super upset that he's missing this one.
Oh, man.
But it worked out well because me and Matt would have had to fight over it if not. So, so thanks for being here, brother.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Sorry
and
for being
of course,
late.
Mr. Wyatt Flores.
Yeah. Yes, that is the rumor. That is who I am.
Usually, we were just talking before the pod. Usually, we have these podcasts at like 10 a.m. and I can't drink anything while we're doing it because I'm like, at 10 a.m., I can't do it. But this one's closer to 5, as you can kind of see on the Oris clock.
Well, we're going to be just fine.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being here, brother. Matt, why don't you kick us off a little?
So how excited are you for this freaking record, bro? Scared of Heights. Like, let's go. It seems like a new chapter, a new era for you, too.
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, I've been excited since the day I was done. Once my part was done, I was like, I'm ready to put it out. And then, of course, you know, you got to plan things. And I was just like, come on, come on. And then all of a sudden, July, like, kicked the door down. I don't know where this year is gone, but it's just left. And so it's crazy that we're right here, what, 6 hours out from this thing finally coming out?
Yep.
I don't know. It's insane. I've been very excited with the singles, but I also made sure to leave like a whole bunch of meat still left on the album for everyone else.
There's so much. And we got a little bit of a pre-listen, so we got to, of course, like listen to it ahead of time. And sonically, I mean, it's definitely different than what you've done. And even some variants on it, like Sleepless Lullaby.
Dude.
I mean, that's like rock. It's like pop. It's so cool. Like, that's honestly one of the songs that I hear from it that like sticks out to me. And that's one that's, you know, of course, releasing
that
with the album.
Yeah, man. We wanted to make it a single, but we're like, no, we need to leave it for the album.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You know, you try and pick good singles that are going to be catchy, that'll get people. But like, that's why we started with Running on E. I was like, to introduce people to this, like, we need to dip their toes in the water.
Yeah.
Not give them the full thing yet. Yeah. And so it's been fun picking out these singles, but Sleepless, that is my favorite song off the album, hands down.
Like, me too.
That song, as soon as we were done writing it, I was like, this is magic. This is insane.
And the production's super cool too. I mean, honestly, like being a kid that grew up in the 90s, it has some of that like 90s, 2000s elements in it. I love it.
Dude, that one.
Who'd you write it with?
I've wrote it with Jamie McLaughlin and Jackson. Yes, Jackson Morgan. That was a whole lot of fun. That's my second song with them. My first one was Little Town off the last album.
Yeah.
And then I sat down and wrote that one with them last May. And I knew as soon as we wrote it, I was like, this is insane. But we even had Jamie come in and play guitar on it, which was fun as hell, too.
Awesome.
But no, that one for me definitely feels like my most like Nickelback song, which I was so happy about. Like, anyone out there that doesn't like Nickelback is just lying to themselves.
Let's go. I knew we were friends. Let's go. We've been friends for a while, but you say something like that. And it's like when people think about Oklahoma, like you're one of the guys in the current state of music that has come out of the great state of Oklahoma. With, we could talk about Stillwater and the Tumbleweed and Tulsa and all that, but there's just as much of a rock history as there is a country history there, with All American Rejects, with Hinder, with folks like that have come out of there. So it's like you grew up listening to country and Americana, but you grew up with some rock stuff too.
Oh,
you hear it on this record.
I mean, truthfully, like, I've always wanted to go this direction, and I kind of have like hinted at it multiple times with Break My Bones, Losing Sleep even.
Yes.
You listen to that melody and boy howdy, it was definitely headed in that direction. But like, all I had was an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
You know, at the time of writing all this stuff, I didn't know how to like play rock. I didn't really start playing with an electric in my hand until 2 years ago. And that would have been like November. So maybe like a year and a half. Like, I've slowly started changing over. And it's not like I completely forgot about playing acoustic and that folkier style. It's just, I didn't expect me to go ahead and write this album the way that it did. Like, I knew that I was going to go there eventually and try and like make the album have like this 2005 like nostalgic feeling. I just didn't know it was going to be my sophomore album until I like wrote Running on E and Drunken Love like back to back. And then I was like, okay, I have to follow that. Like, it's right here in front of me. I got to keep going.
Well, I think it's great too, and I mean, all of the greatest artists on the planet all have seasons in their sound, right? It's like, even if you like listen to an old rock band like the Red Hot Chili Peppers in their early days, like it's kind of just chaos, you know. Oh. And then it starts to become, you know, a song like Under the Bridge kind of breaks out what their sound was, and then it's honestly like every record has been developing since. I mean, the greatest artists on the planet are never inside of a box.
Yeah, man. And I often, I mean, we joke about it too, of just like the whole Bob Dylan thing where he was playing the folk festival. I can't even remember what the, yeah, it was Newport. And then he brings out an electric and then they're taking an axe to the entire wiring of the thing. And it's like, that's kind of what I'm doing right now. Cause I definitely have fans that are like, what are you doing? Why did you leave? And like, they're like, you're selling out. And I was like, I'm nowhere near done. Yeah. Like, oh man, it's been fun though. Like, I really did have to change stylistically, like what I was, like how I was writing.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I knew that I was on that edge, like, of course, Tulsa and Eleanor and Sleepless were like right before I wanted to chase what I was after. But like, it was weird for me to like have to change. Like, if I was going to do this sound, I knew that stylistically writing was going to be different for me. Yeah. I couldn't just do the same thing that I've done before, which was so fun for me because it created this challenge in front of me of like, okay, normally I would do this. Normally I'd do something really weird here, but like, honestly, it feels like it's supposed to just drive straight through. And that was fun for me. Like, you know, I have so much freedom as a creative, but to challenge myself was something that I really haven't done. To where I've done something that's so different that it even makes me think differently. And then when it came to the recording, like once I had the songs, I knew what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And like God Forgives, I was like, dude, we got to do like that orchestra sounding like instrumental solo thing going on there. And that was just funner and all get out for me. I'm sitting in there talking to Joe, who's probably like 72 fiddle player. And I'm just like, hey, Joe, can you play this? And da da da. And then he just... I think so. And then he just starts going off. And I was like, this is so crazy right now. Oh, man. Yeah, Joe was probably my favorite to work with. Awesome. He'd show up in overalls and a Tractor Supply hat. And I was like, you're my guy.
Yeah, as we record behind the Tractor Supply.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Located, very on brand. Shout out. And I think you talk about like having that orchestra type of feeling, like having those big moments. And mm-hmm. that's how I would describe a live show yes. for you. It's like... It'll have those, it has so many swells, but then you have those like big moments where the Dude. Lights are just gone, like the crowd just becomes entrenched in it.
We like to bring people on a journey with us. Like, yeah. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's bands that I've definitely seen that are just balls to the walls from the time they walk out on stage to the moment it ends. And that's cool. However, like I've always enjoyed music that was more, dynamic for sure is the correct word. There's other words for it too, but dynamics for sure. Like we try and really focus on that as a band of like, here's our low points and how do we build out of this yeah. and how do we do it? That's not just the same way every single time.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
just been fun. It's never ended. And it's just fun to bring people on the journey. Cause that's, I can see it on the crowd's face. I'm like, you feel it. And that's when we, no, I'm like, we're winning. We're doing it right. Oh my gosh, it's working.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's like, you know, my favorite records of all time, you feel like a roller coaster, right? Yeah. And there's ups and there's downs. And even sometimes in one song, you'll have that. But the live show, that's the most important.
Absolutely. I mean, speaking of live shows, one of my first ever like big time venues is where I met you, of course. Yeah. And like since then, it was like, all right. We got to start studying up. How do we create something that people are actually going to want to come and see? And I think that's the only reason that we've been able to stay relevant through all this. Because, you know, there was that wave that hit where everyone was getting famous on TikTok. And a lot of them have stayed, don't get me wrong. But there was a lot of people that I don't even know what they're doing these days just because it was like they went famous on TikTok and then never really quite
hit that again.
Built.
Yeah,
I guess. And that's the true blessing is that I was forced to do that from a very young age.
You had to learn how to play shows. That's yeah. how you got a name or street cred where you're from in Stillwater.
Absolutely.
You go and play at the Weed or you go down the strip and play. And if you're not playing in front of people, people aren't going to know who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting thing, too. It's like it used to be, like you said, like one song could pop you and then that would last for such a long time. Now it's like, what's the body of work look like? Mm. That's how you stay there.
Absolutely.
Right? A video that goes viral can be meaningful, of course, like yes. that impacts people's lives. But the real nuts and bolts of it is like for Ella Langley, like with her thing that you're seeing right now. She has a body of work that people can go back to. If they just found Ella Langley by her like now crossing over into the mainstream, they have so much that they can go back and say, oh crap.
She's been here.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah.
And like that was kind of the struggle for Please Don't Go, because it got so much, you know, it went viral and it was like, oh, we gotta scramble to like put some more stuff out. So then that's why there was a whole bunch of singles that led after that EP and everything else, because we were like, I got to give them something. I don't want to just have one. And it's like, well, here's five others that didn't even go past 100,000 streams. Like,
yeah.
And I know that, like, when you look me up or whatever, my streams are crazy on Please Don't Go. Forever grateful for it. But, like, the bodies of work that have been put out is what has helped us stay alive.
100%.
And with this album, it's like, I'm not just going to keep on doing the same thing. It's like, I'm finally getting my feet underneath me. And it feels great, man. Like, to finally... You know, I'm 25 now, and it's like, I still feel so young in my artistry, but I know that I'm finally starting to get somewhere, like, where I have more creative, not control, but, like, I'm better off explaining what I want in my creative. Like, there for a while, I was just a kid, and I was like, I don't know what I'm really doing. I'm just trying to piece things together as we go, and now it's more like, when I feel the direction, I'm chasing it, and that has been huge in this new era.
I love that. And that's, I mean, the difference between like being someone who's a good songwriter or a good singer to being an artist, yes. right? It's like you're getting into your artist era.
And it's fun. You know?
Yeah. And it's super cool. And I mean, even like the album art, you know what I mean? It seems intentional. Like, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. Like the album art, of course, we've always stuck with Chloe. Ever since she did Please Don't Go, I was like, I want her forever. Mm-hmm. But we really liked what we did for the Arcane's Ballroom album art, where we had Matt Paskert shoot the photos and then Chloe put her art on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so this time we were like, let's do that again, except this time I don't want the artwork to be so chaotic. I want it to be very focal pointed. And like me, dude, I'm a goofy looking guy. I don't want to see myself on my own albums. Like, dude, sitting there up on a cattle rail, like, I don't want that. I don't think people want that. Like, I'd rather make something interesting, and that's what's always kept it so cool. But this album art, I was like, you know what? Finally, I'll finally put myself on there. But I just love how the both came to be. Like, we weren't ever planning on me standing on top of the truck, and then I just ended up getting up on top of there, and we're like, okay, well, this is the coolest thing ever. You can see the stars in the back, and then Chloe putting the entire skeletons all together, which we thought we were done with the skeleton, but we were like, nah, we got to bring it back. But yeah, man, it looks sick. In my opinion, it's one of the coolest album covers that we've ever made.
Yeah, and I think it's iconic looking, too. Even just looking at it for the first time, like when I saw it cross my, I'm like, oh, okay. Which, I mean, that's when you know you hit it. Yeah. Right. When you see something for the first time and it looks like you've like it breaks through and you're OK, that means it's going to last this test of time.
And we've always loved it because, you know, you give Chloe the art and in her own way, she interprets it. And it's what she sees inside of her head, which I think is so freaking cool. Like for another artist to take your art, and put their art on top of it and their interpretation of it like that. No one's really doing that. In my opinion, there's not too many that are out there doing that. And it's just been awesome to work with her.
I love that.
That's awesome, dude. Well, I want to go back to some of the times we've gotten to see you live. And I wanted to ask how this year has been with being out there. Because you've been a road dog for a while now. How special was that Cafri headlining for you last year, man? Like, your whole family getting to be there. Like, the Great Divide guys being there watching you. Like, just what a moment that was for you.
It was a scary moment because the night before, Waylon Wyatt, sorry. I've been yelling at my manager, William, all day. Waylon Wyatt was opening up for us in Columbus, Missouri the night before, and my voice went out. Like, thank goodness there was a rain thing that came through. I only had to play an hour, and then all of a sudden, I was just like, something's wrong. Like, my voice just started going out. I ended up not being able to speak to anyone that day.
I remember.
It was a crazy day, too. Like, I'm getting to come home, headline the first time ever Calf Rye, and I bought a horse. I bought my dad's old horse back, Hitch, and then I also got a shot in the ass in front of all my friends. Like, they had brought someone over to do, like, the IVs and stuff, like a nurse. They came over to the house, and then she's like, stand up, and I was like, hmm? And she's like, drop your pants. And I was like, what? And they had ordered a steroid shot. So I'm sitting there, and all my friends are drinking. They're just hanging out. I'm watching movies, like, with a thing on my face, like, trying to do anything we can to save this night from not being a wreck. And I'm having to sit up against my pool table, and all my friends just get real quiet, and they're just all watching me pull my pants down so someone can give me a shot in the ass. And I was like, this is not how I expected this day to go at all. But better yet, one of the cooler things too, like what makes like my little kid heart happy, coolest thing ever was getting to ride in my feed truck and have a police escort into the festival. Oh man, dude, I was losing it. And my friends had left the house an hour and a half beforehand, and I passed them as they were almost, and they, oh man, it was just some funny shit. They're like, wow, ain't you a hot shot? And anyway, but yeah, that night was incredible. I mean, I've always wanted that. Like, since I was a kid watching The Great Divide, like, I remember sitting there on that stage as a kid eating cheeseburgers with all the other kids, and we're just making faces at Kelly, the bass player, and then that was what sparked the dream. You know, like, that's when it hit me. I was like, I want to do that, and I don't know how to do that, but I want to do it. And to come back around full circle, hometown show, headlining Calf Rye, it was insane, dude. Like, that... That I mean, and playing Stillwater.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Dude, it slapped. But yeah, I sat there on the front of that stage after everyone was gone, and I just sat there and drank a beer and just tried to process what had just happened, because it was another mile marker of like, okay, man, we got a long ways to go. It's like, enjoy this moment for right now, but the work is far from being done.
Yeah, dude. And you've gotten to do, I mean, you were a part of those Ragweed shows too, right?
Yes. This year we got to be a part of Boys from Oklahoma. Well, the year before we got invited, and which I thought was super cool. Cross Canadian Ragweed had asked me if I'd come up and sing Alabama with them for the last two nights, because I was at Cattle Country Fest in Texas. So we missed the first two nights, came up. I ended up singing with The Great Divide, Turnpike, and Cross Canadian Ragweed.
Hit the Holy Trinity.
Oh, dude, yeah, just kept on going. And that was, that's one thing that really struck out to me was the first time around getting to experience that. Like, Red Dirt there for a while felt like it was dying in the town. Like, it wasn't really the same thing that I grew up listening to and all the stories.
Yeah.
It felt like it was dying off. And now it's fully alive. There's people playing back on the strip again. And we had that, but like not to the extreme that it is now. Like, people are wanting to come play. They're asking to come play. Like, they're booked out every single week, which is incredible to see, because that scene needs to stay alive. Mm-hmm. Like, it truly has shaped so much for me, but I know for so many others. And that's, it's just crazy to be a part of it, I guess. Like,
yeah, man.
Well, and I mean, I think, like, you know, that was the thing that was in that area for so long. But I mean, you're seeing that, you know, branch out into other genres, and you're seeing it branch out into mainstream country radio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's always been far reaching, but now I feel like it's even further reaching than it used to be.
Dude, it's getting crazy.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many options that you have with music nowadays, which I think is incredible, because I think we can all agree that there was a very lengthy time where you did one thing and one thing only.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I would change the radio station inside that tractor every single time.
Yeah.
Because it just was the same thing. And it's like, now we have so many different varieties, and you can find whatever you want.
Yeah.
And that's really cool to see. And I know everyone's wanting me to stick with Welcome to the Plains, but it's like, man, I'm going to do this, and I'm fixing to start writing the next album because I'm ready for it. And there's no telling what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is not me saying, hey, this is who I am. It's like, no, this is just another part of me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you can do whatever you want.
100%. And I mean, like you said, you're 25, right? you're going to have a long career of making music and figuring out who you are. Because who you were at 17 and who you are at 25 is not close to the same person.
Oh, God, no. I'd be so scared if you put him up against a mic right now. Yeah. the stories would be a lot different.
Yeah. And that's one of the lines that, you know, and it's a famous saying, like, you're always 17 in your hometown. That sticks out.
Dude.
And that song in general is sad but super meaningful.
It definitely is. It's got like a bit of hope in that chorus.
Yeah.
It was the hope. You know, it's still kind of sitting there telling yourself that you're not good enough for it, you know, but at the end of it, it truly is supposed to give you a bit of hope, because as much as my music can be sad and really bring out some emotions that you might not be ready for, like, that's the main message, is like, hey, we all fail in our own ways and there's still hope and there's still light for, you know, like, for me and half the man in that song, like, I've been blessed with such a great challenge in life to try and fill the shoes of my parents. Like, that is a blessing. And of course, yeah, every single time that I came home before I really found balance in my life, I didn't know how to come home. So I was just a shithead messing up every single time. And now it's where I'm finally getting things slowly figured out, I guess, if that makes sense. And it's like, it's okay. I'm not supposed to have it figured out.
No. If you're comparing that to someone that lives a regular life, you're not supposed to have it figured out.
No, not at all.
You know, it's just the light that shined on you is different than the light that shined on even your buddies, you know? And so you're probably doing the same dumb things that they're doing, but more people are talking about it when you're doing it.
Yes.
You know?
Goodness.
I always say, like, if someone met me when they were 25 and they liked the person I am now, I'm like, they would have hated me when I was 25.
I'm right there with you.
Gosh, but no, it's like what you do, it forces you to grow up, you know?
It does.
There's too many lights shining on it to do anything else, you know?
And there's so many miles, and you've got this team around you, whether it's your road crew or it's your team here in town that are like working with you and depending on you, you know?
It's a crazy feeling. That for me was like really difficult for me to like put in perspective. Like, I was like, I'm just some kid from Oklahoma is what I kept telling myself when everything was really buzzing and I started getting a name. And then all of a sudden I was like, that first tour went into crippling debt and depression. And I'm sitting there going, I'm responsible to put food not only on my band and all my crew's table, like put food on their table, but their families.
Yeah.
And that freaked me out. I was like, I'm not equipped for this job. Yeah. Like, I just work here.
Yeah.
and like, that definitely freaked me out. But now it's where I feel like I'm finally coming into place. And it's like, okay, how do I keep being a leader? You know, and I still mess up all day long. But it's like, I'm getting better at it every single time.
Yeah, everybody's still human, man. I mean,
it's how you recover.
Absolutely.
It's how you recover from those moments, you know? That's the big thing.
Yes, sir.
It's the bounce back. I wanted to ask about, like, where'd the album title come from with Scared of Heights? Like, how do you come to that?
Well, it's actually really simple.
Are you scared of heights?
Dude, I'm scared of falling, straight up.
Yeah.
I can get up on heights, but, man, when I start looking down, that's where the fear really comes in. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can get up on heights, and that's fine, but you look over the edge, and you start dreaming about, What if my foot slipped right here in this moment while I'm doing a sketchy welding job with my father? Yeah, what would happen? but it came from a ski lift in Breckenridge, Colorado. Just randomly, some, you know, snowboarder was sitting there and he goes, dude, are you scared of heights or are you scared of falling? And I thought it was a funny question, and then I wrote it down. And then in the midst of writing this album, I thought it was a stupid idea I was going through, and I was like, this is the best I got. We've already written everything else. I'm going through the slum of everything, and they're like, no, that's perfect. And so we just started going into it, and I kind of explained what it really meant to me, and we just dove in. But the coolest part about that song is the ooze. Like, we did it all the way around a iPhone. And then we just put it into Pro Tools and slapped some reverb on it and called it a day. But, like, that song, as soon as we were done with it, I was like, I know that it is so different than everything else on the album. But this, to me, feels like the main the main theme of everything is like the fear of letting people down. The, like, for me, even personally and on my career side, like, I got to a point where I got scared, where I wouldn't do anything, which is way worse, you know, than doing something. So I finally came to the point where I was like, you know what, this is what it is. This is what I've been fighting for the last 2 years of being scared. It's like, I'm fixing to go in this direction. Might as well stand on business, you know? And that's pretty much how the song became the title track of everything and the album. And I was just like, we have to keep this. Like, it's such a weird song. I get it, but it has to be.
Yeah.
I love it. And that's the, like we talked about, like the album is a little bit of multiple things, but I think that's part of the brilliance of it is it's, if you're going to do something different than what someone thought that you should do, right? Maybe yeah. even some of your fans, like, let's like really spread it out and give them a vast array of different things. And that's like, when I listen to this record, I'm like, I think this is his best work.
That's what he texted me as soon as we got that link and listened through.
Well, that means the world.
Yeah. And the production's super cool too.
Oh man.
It's like, it feels retro. It feels a little modern. You know what I mean? It's outside of the lane. Who did you use to work with? Is it new people?
Definitely. I still haven't. I guess people just find their producer. I just keep on meeting people, and I'm like, man, why don't you do it?
Yeah.
this time around, it was on the Post Malone tour.
Yeah.
Where I met Charlie Handsome. And,
yeah.
And Braden, he's trying to tell me. He's like, do you know who this guy is? He's like, no, and I don't give a shit. He's cool. He's got beer. We're hanging out. We're talking. I don't care. And anyway, we ended up hanging out with him the entire time. My bus actually left me in Miami, and so he was nice enough to just let us get on the big loud bus, slept the entire way, and then got off at like 7 in the morning and then Ubered back to my own bus. But but that's how I met Charlie, and I still didn't even know what he did or anything. And then 2 weeks later, I met Jay Cash in L.A., and I still didn't know who he was either. I just showed up to write, and he was like, man, you got like this punk rock thing about you. And I was like, that's great. Because the first song I want to write is going to be called Drunken Love, and that's exactly what it is. Of course, had to change the title to not get sued by Beyonce.
Yeah.
but yeah, that's where it all started. And then Jay Cash was invested. He cleared his entire schedule the next day.
Wow.
And then we wrote Running on E. And then Charlie found out, like, we started building everything out. We're like, we're going to set some dates around Nashville, and we're just going to sit down and write a whole bunch of songs, create a writing camp. And it was the coolest thing ever. Like, that's where I found, like, the click again. Because, you know, I talked about being scared of writing. Once I figured out where I was headed, there was one day 5.5 songs were written.
That's great.
And I was on a tear. But, yeah, it was the funnest thing getting to work with both of them. And then Charlie was like, I really want in on this. Like, I want to produce as well. And that's how it all kind of came together. Like, I still didn't really know who they were until hanging out with them long enough. And I was like, y'all know what you're doing.
That's the best way to meet somebody of the caliber of those two guys. Like, is to not have an idea.
I was just having this conversation not too long ago about songwriters too, like just songwriters. Like when I was here, I didn't like knowing who people were or what they wrote, things like that. Like I didn't want to know. I didn't want to feel like, oh, you're such and such. It's like, we're going to meet on the same level. And because at the end of the day in a writing room, you got to get vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be sitting there going, oh, that's Mr. So-and-so. Like, I don't want that. I just want to show up and be like, you seem like a cool dude. Now, this is what's going on in my life. Let's figure it out. And that's honestly been the best advice I could give a new artist, honestly, is just walk into a room not knowing who they are.
Yeah. Everybody is same day, puts on their pants one leg at a time.
Absolutely.
You know?
Dude, sometimes I still trip.
Yeah. I love it. One of the other things that I always love about you, and I think that is something that's super cool, is how you will take something like a show getting rained out on a day and turn it into a way that you can connect with fans. You know, like doing little pop-up shows, like we got to see.
I actually have the shirt on right here. Your name's on the back, even though you played out at the campsites.
Yeah, but man, like the thing I always say is with life and everything is the roller coaster is going to go up and it's going to go down, right? But how fast you can turn that down into an upswing. And I feel like you, better than almost any other artist I can think of, take opportunities to take a time where, man, we were going to get to play in front of freaking 15,000 fans into, hey, let me turn these fans that really care about this into even more super fans than they already are. Can we talk about like that event?
Yeah.
Well, pretty much the entire day. Yeah. We just sat there. I was teaching the band how to rope the dummy.
Yeah.
And we were just doing random things. We ended up stealing Cody Johnson's golf cart. I don't even think he was there, but I was like, keys are in it. and no one's stopping me. But yeah, when we found out that it got rained out and they were like, no, we're canceling this entire thing, I was like, well, I got to drive through the night back to Oklahoma in my own truck. Like, there's no chance in hell I'm not playing to anybody. I get it. They got insurance on the whole thing. I'll still get paid. I don't feel like that's satisfying for me. I don't just do it for money. It's like, I came here to do something for people.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, screw it. Still got the keys to Cody Johnson's golf cart, and we have acoustic instruments. Let's just go do a pop-up out there and find someone's tailgate. And sure enough, like, it worked out great. I will say this, though. The people that we did play to, there were some that were really trying to listen, and there were some that were already, like, two beers away from passing out in the grass. Like, they came to party out there. But, man, we've always just kind of done that. And even with, like, our pop-up shows here in Nashville, like the OG Basement.
Yeah, that place is a huge part of your story, bro.
Dude, but it's so much fun to go back because it's like, dude, never forget that feeling of what it's like to be so close to the fans. Mm-hmm. Like, that's oftentimes what I don't like about festivals is, oh man, I probably shouldn't say this. They'll probably hate me for it. But like the VIP sections, half the time, I get it. They make quite a bit of money, which helps pay for everything. Most of the time, they don't show up until the headliner's fixing to go on because they know that they don't have to fight the crowd. They just go through VIP. They show up for the headliner. I get it. I can't stand it. I'm so far away from the fans as is, and that doesn't, I miss that intimacy, I guess, that is created when you're closer to them. And sometimes when they feel so far away, I'm like, I feel like I'm in a fishbowl right now. And they're just looking at the screens, which is cool. Don't get me wrong. It's cool. Yeah. Plenty of people. But, like, man, I just feel like that gets lost. Of course, the gain is that you're going to get to see a whole bunch of your favorite artists because the lineup's huge. But, like, you got to remember those times where, you know, you can get that close to the people that also feel so close to your music.
Yeah.
And that's what's been fun. But more than that, we've done it on truck beds so many times that I ended up taking my truck bed off of my 01 Dodge and ended up cutting it in half so that way we could take it on the road with us wherever we went. So we've kind of made it into our set now to where it's like, well, we're going to do that. And that's been fun as all, especially at Tailgates and Tall Boys this last time. People thought that we made it just for that festival. And I was like, nah, this thing's been on the road with us since March.
Yeah. I love that. And honestly, like, we talk about the side stage, like, as Raise Rowdy, right? Like, we get to see artists before they're playing the main stage or before they're headlining festivals. And that's why, like, having our name on side stages at this, like, this summer specifically has been so cool because, like, we got to see Cameron Whitcomb, who should probably be playing the main stage.
Yes.
Yeah. But we got to see him absolutely demolish the side stage at Tailgate and Tall Boys.
Dude.
And
it was crazy, dude.
And it was nuts. Watch fans from 13 to 60 all almost crying, singing lyrics. Like, you get that club vibe from that side stage. And when you have someone that's like almost like an underplay on that side stage,
it's insane.
It's insane.
Dude, and Cam's been on a tear for a while.
Yes.
But like I was very much sitting there going, hey, not that anyone messed up here, but like, shouldn't he be on a
Yeah, the fact that he had two bus acts playing the side stage was wild.
It felt wrong. Yeah. It felt so wrong.
And honestly, we were chatting with their team a little bit, and I'm like, no, that that headlining spot on the side stage is the one you want.
Yeah. But that's exactly.
Yeah.
Dude, that moment of playing that stage and having that, like, that's what helped build our career.
Yeah.
Was being underplayed in multiple situations and it just being an absolute blowout to where it builds the point where you skip some levels so you can make it higher up on the main stage.
Yeah.
So it's going to play out for him 100%. Very well.
Yeah, my favorite thing is when you see someone headline a side stage and then the next year they're back at that festival and they're either direct support or the headliner.
Yep.
You know, like that's when you really know the needle is moving.
Absolutely.
That's when they actually have diehard fans, you know.
Dude, that was definitely what Stagecoach was for us. Like we played the 230 slot 2 years ago mm-hmm. and then this time they asked us to close out the Palomino stage and it was we prepared for that one show for a month. We're like, this is going to be, we're taking this moment, seizing it. And that was even more fun because we've never actually played to cameras, I guess.
Yeah, but it's a different thing when you got like the pro shots going around.
But like it changed everything for how we do things. And we're slowly starting to put it into our, you know, pre-show of like, we're going to sit down as a band before we got to go off on our separate ways and get ready for the show. We're going to sit down and walk through the entire set list. What is going to happen here? What is going to happen here? What are the transitions looking like here? How do we want to make sure that this keeps flowing?
Yeah.
And that just like locks us even more in. And that's all you can ask for.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we don't play to click tracks at all.
No.
Or any of that.
Yeah.
Like we have, I guess, tracks for like our intro that Clem, our keys player, made. He just hits a button and then that's how we start the show because no one's out there yet. But like other than that, we ain't got nothing. We're just trusting each other the entire time.
How many pieces do you have in the band?
Still six.
Still six.
But it's continuous. I bought a new board and we don't even have enough channels anymore.
Wow.
We have so many inputs. It's not even funny.
I think it's so cool too. Like, I mean, from when I was a kid, right? I'm old. So there was no in-ears. There were just wedges.
Woodstock 99 was wedges.
Yeah. You're playing like to those that many people that you can't hear what you're doing. Like, you're just guessing. That you know, you're running on muscle memory.
And a whole lot of faith.
Yes. But, and, you know, I mean, the days before they had figured out how you set the speakers so that it didn't, like, you know, go out to people in random amounts of time. It's magical to see a show and watch it change. And when you're not doing a click and when you don't have tracks, every show's a little bit different.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
I mean, it's fun for us because you have to pay attention. Like, you don't just have a thing going on that tells you what time you're in. It's like, no, our show can change on a dime. And that's what it's always kind of been. It's like, yeah, we know these songs. And we know how they're going to end. But we've always been at that point to where any of us can switch it. And someone will say, no, we're going to this chord and we're going to go trail off and do something different. And that's been like the funnest part for us is like we haven't lost that, I guess. I know that it's super helpful for a lot of bands. And I know for even, you know, stadiums and arenas, like talking about latency, me as a singer, when I go out on a catwalk, oh, man, you're getting two worlds colliding, and it's hard to know which kick or snare is the real one.
So you're talking about live show and all that you're doing and missing those moments of when the crowd was right on top of you at the basement. Part of this album rollout, you guys are doing some sick pop-up shows.
Yes.
Walk us through the idea to do that and where you're doing them.
I think it's always just been fun. Like, we've always done pop-up shows and just tried to make it, you know, for the fans, like, it's always fun for us because it kind of like lets down the guard of like what a real show is. And it's like, nah, this one's just for everyone, including us. Like we like prioritize making it the best show that they could possibly ever get from us. Don't get me wrong. But like also at the same time, it kind of is like, well, what you see is what you get. So you never know what we're going to do. And we get the freedom to do whatever we want. And for this, it's like, we're going to play Tulsa. Then after that, we're going to go here to Nashville at Skinny Dennis and then play Denver at Broken Bow and then Chicago at Carol's Pub. And like the entire idea of it is just to go play music. Like, yeah, everyone's wondering why we're doing free shows. It's like, because I care
about
that more than fucking money. Like, dude, you can go make money elsewhere. You got plenty of time to do that in your life. But, like, creating moments has been the thing since the beginning. It's like, if you can create moments that you will remember when I'm sitting there, 83 years old, fixing a croak. Yeah, I don't know how long I'll live. I'm surprised I'm even 25 right now. that's what I'm looking for. So, yeah, we're going to play the new album. We're not going to do it top to bottom. We're just, I don't even know what the set list is going to be. I might start working on it tonight. But I probably should start working on it tonight. But, like, we're just looking for a great time and to show these people, like, we're still, like, as much as this music has changed, it's still us.
Yeah.
And that's, it's going to be fun as hell.
I think that's one of the coolest parts about it, too, is, like, the greatest artists bring you into their world. And what better way to bring you into your world than getting a sweaty little venue?
Oh, man.
Dude, Carol's is going to be wild. Skinny Dennis, I cannot wait, bro. We have that on the calendar. We're going to be there.
Dude, it's going to be fun. Bro, I have never played Skinny Dennis. Or, like, I didn't even know it existed until, what, like a year ago?
Well, it's pretty new.
It is pretty new.
It's not much older than a year.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I thought it's been around for a while.
So the original's up in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So this is, and then they opened this.
It's a tiny little shithole.
And Carol's Pub, we were supposed to play, and then we ended up going to Joe's on Weed Street. Like it.
You got too big.
Well, even crazier, like we opened up for 49 Winchester 2 months before we were supposed to play Carol's Pub. And then it was like, no, we're going to Joe's on Weed Street. And that was insane.
Joe's is such a great
venue. I love that. That's one of my favorite rooms in the world.
It's incredible.
Ed Warm is one of those guys that is like, he believes in things before everybody does, and he has changed the landscape of country music.
He's an early adopter and a champion.
Yeah. He's one of the guys that, like, when you talk about legendary club owners, not just club owners, festival owners, lovers of country music, like, he's one of those guys that just has changed the game.
I will never forget my first time meeting him. And him giving me an envelope as a thank you with a letter. And he gave me $1,000 because he could tell how much we were struggling trying to make it through the first bit of touring. And he's like, here's gas money to get down the road. And that, just that, I know $1,000 is a lot. Folks, you have no idea how much money we spent on diesel over the years.
Yeah.
But that little small gesture meant so much to us. Like, I'll never forget sitting in the van and trying not to, like, have a tear roll down my eye, because at that part in my life, like, we were trying to keep the wheels on the track. Everything was falling apart. I was homeless for, like, what, two weeks, hopping couches, fired the old management, things like that, and it was just a struggle through it all. But when he gave us that, I was like, okay, you know, people believe in what's happening. And that, yeah, I could speak highly about Ed Warm till the day I die.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, too. It's like, there's so many people that just love music. And, I mean, I've been one of those people my whole life, you know?
Yeah.
And my brothers were before me, you know? Yeah. But people that can really have an impact on the thing that they love, like Ed has, it's super powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah, dude. And it's like the lane that he's helped is like, part of your origin story too, where it's like he was one of the first guys to get Turnpike up to Chicago, get Coetzel up to Chicago, get Ragweed back in the day up to Chicago. Like he's been in the game and been a champion of getting those acts out of Texas and Oklahoma north for so many years.
Oh yeah, and it's changed the game.
Yeah,
because back then you only played Oklahoma, maybe one small little bit of Arkansas, Texas, and Denver. Yeah. And that was it. Steamboat, you know, things like that, and you didn't ever get outside of it. So like for me, like when I was coming into the scene, I was like, my goal is to get past Oklahoma, and by God, we've done it.
Yes. Yeah, bro.
I would say
you've gotten to tour nationally too, right?
Oh yeah, been to Europe twice, UK three times, and Australia twice.
What are the people like over there in comparison? Because I know everyone says it's different. Like I said, Kurt's over there right
now. Shout out Kurt.
UK UK is a little bit more like it is here. Europe is very different. The golf claps after every song. Doesn't matter if you've completely rocked the entire house down. Weird for me. I'm like, oh boy, I think they hate us. and then Australia, they're they're the rowdiest people I've ever met.
Yeah.
But they're, yeah, I can move to Australia. Literally. That is my favorite place to play.
Yeah. Like, it's a long flight, but once you're there, they appreciate it.
Oh, man, it's worth it. It really, and I brought my grandma the last time, which was,
dude, that's
sick. I had no idea that she'd never seen a beach in her life.
Wow.
She shows up to my Sydney show and she's like, I got to walk on the beach for the first time. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, no, this is my first time ever seeing a beach. And I was like, well, what did you think? And she goes, sand was everywhere. It is incredible, though.
Oh, that has to be such a cool part of it, too. It's like, not only are you living your dream, but your dream has made so many other people get to experience so many things.
It's even crazier, though. Like, when we talk about this being my dream, it's not. It's a generational dream. Like, it's been going on for a very long time. My grandfather played guitar, who taught his, you know, son, my uncle, Bob, how to play guitar, who bought my dad drums and was playing in bars since he was 12, which he's got hilarious stories of just mountains of beer all around him at 12 years old. And I'm like, what? It was, yeah, that's why we have laws now. You're the reason. And so it's like such a crazy thing to see it now. Like, yeah, I mean, I've been in this for a decent amount of time and I've lived a lot of life, but like, I can't even say that this is like my dream. It just, it's crazy that this has been going on for a very long time. And I'm just the first to finally break it.
Yeah. That's so cool. And you know, there's stories of like, you know, your family being friends with the Great Divide. Oh, yeah. And, you know, you were talking about being a kid just side stage, you know, so you've been around this thing for a while, but
I didn't expect it to end up like this.
Yeah. So cool, though.
Oh, man, it's been a freaking ride. A hell of a ride.
And you're still just getting started. This is
sophomore
album, bro. Sophomore album. You ain't even out of high school yet. Yeah. Your music career, bro.
No, it's one of my favorite things that we get to do with, like, hosting events and now, like, being at the festivals and stuff is just, like, watching people develop and watching shows get better. And usually we see it at a micro level where it's like we watch someone go from figuring out a song to now they can shut the room up.
Dude.
But like watching how different your show is every time we see you is amazing.
The ones that really got me right now, Evan Honer, of course, he's been a very long, long friend. But I mean, he's always had a great show. But this last time that I seen him down there in Texas, I was like, I'm scared to go on after him. Like, it was insane. I was like, he's gotten so much better. And, like, just building out a show, it was insane to watch. And another one was Baker Blankenship.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Brother. He used to open up for us, and we were like, man, you can feel it. Like, they're starting to get curious about things. Not when I was seeing him in Texas either. I was like, you got to be kidding me. When did this happen? It's only been 6 months, brother. And then Waylon Wyatt. I seen him at CMA. First time ever I got to witness him with the full band. I was just like, what? Like, everyone's growing up right in front of me. And, like, I remember there was a time, you know, that everyone looked at me like the little kid, you know, that was just running around trying to figure things out. And, like, I've been so grateful to be a part and get to witness more than anything. Get to witness the ones that are coming up now. It's so crazy for me to watch it and be like, I know how that feels. I hope they know, like, I hope they're proud of themselves for how far they have come. Like, cause that was a tough thing for me of never like giving myself the 1,000-foot view to be like, man, we should be proud of what we have created and what we have built. Cause watching them, I'm like, you're doing it. You're doing the damn thing.
Yeah.
It's freaking awesome.
I love that. And I mean, it's always easier to see it on the outside than it is when you're living in it, you know? So, it's cool though. It's Baker is one of my favorite podcasts I've ever had.
Yeah.
He's so fun.
Tell him about the Colby moment.
Oh yeah.
That was one of my all time favorite.
We had Baker on the pod moments. And he had just been at a Colby A-Cup show. And he was like, we waited a couple hours, me and my girl. And like, we got front row and like got to talk to him and stuff. And so Kurt, I mean, we're buddies with Colby, and Kurt called Colby while we were on the pod and like talked to him. Like
FaceTiming on the podcast. Yeah.
Dude, that's incredible.
And then we had a podcast with Flatland Cavalry pretty much right after Baker. And he was like, wait, you guys are podcasting with Flatland Cavalry? And we were like, yeah. And he's like, can I hang out? You know? Oh, and we were like, yeah. So his like energy just filled my whole heart, man. He's such a good guy. I was just texting with him this week. He sent me a couple new songs. They're good, brother.
I bet they are.
Yeah.
Dude, oh my gosh. Every single time I see him, I'm just like, give me a hug, dude. Come here.
Just a great human, man.
All day long.
And it's so cool, too, like, seeing as an artist, like, you... I mean, I'm sure sometimes you don't get to pick who's out on the road with you, but, like, when you do, it's like you get to see those people and watch them get better.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, so fun.
And I'm very lucky. Like, we've been able to, for the most part, every single time, like, pick... who we have open for us. And and there are always people that we believe in. And like right now, if you haven't heard of Shelby Stone, you got to look her up.
She's so awesome.
Yeah. I'm waiting. I'm just like, people are going to wake up one day and be like, holy shit, that is incredible. And I'm just waiting for it because I know there's a bunch of believers, but man, like that has been awesome for us because I know how much I appreciated it when I was opening up for 49 Winchester and Charles Wesley Godwin and them taking us underneath their wing. Can't speak. But that showed us the ropes of what this was like. And we've tried to do that for every single opening act that has ever come our way. Is like open them with loving arms and be like, anything y'all need, let us know. And try and give them that support. Because we've also been with other people where it's like, how much longer is this tour?
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, dude. I remember my first time getting to see you was, I remember Carrie texting me like that morning before we rolled into the tumbleweed and was like, hey, we got this kid opening up. I think he's the next one out of Oklahoma. His name's Wyatt Flores. And I remember sending Nikki T. We weren't even working together at the time. And I remember sending him a video. I think it came through all grainy because of the tumbleweed service underneath that tin roof. And I remember you saying you were going to be moving to Nashville. And then you made the jump, man. And it's like, it's just been wild to watch you over these past few years.
I met you 2 weeks before my first single came out, Traveling Kid.
Yeah, I remember you telling me you had your first
song. You were like, have you ever thought about not playing covers? And I was like, yes, I have. I was like, everyone's on my ass about it right now. Yes. Oh, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's been insane to see, like, how time has played out. You know, because that would have been 2021.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, I got my start in 2020, of course, you know, building everything out, trying to play all these bars. And here we are in 2026. And it still just feels like I'm learning. And I think that's the biggest thing for me is, like, I haven't sat there and go, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing. It's like, no, I'm constantly still growing. And that's why this album, like, still feels like, so fresh, and I'm getting older. Don't get me wrong. My knees hurt for some reason at 25.
Just wait.
Dude, I know. But like, there's so much more to discover, I guess. And like this album, for anyone that's listening to this, like this album may not be your cup of tea, but this is just a little bit of who I am. And that's why we're just going to keep on learning.
It's a chapter. It's a chapter in the big book.
Damn straight. Yep.
I love it. And man, thanks for being here and sharing a little bit about that chapter with us.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
Dude, anytime, man. Your family. We'll bring some of those up as we'll be in Wisconsin and in Oshkosh at Crossroads 41. I'll get to see you next week.
So. Heck yeah.
And we're planning on coming out to the show over at Skinny Dennis as well.
Dude.
We cannot miss a wife. If we could get to all of them, we probably would. Like Carol's Pub, but it's gonna be so electric, and I love that room so much.
I can't freaking wait.
We love a good club. I just did a video about it. They're the best, man.
That's the most intimate it can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, brother, thanks so much for, like we said, for being here and traveling. I know you had a busy day of content and stuff. Yeah. So thanks for taking the time out.
The C word.
Content. Everything is content. Everything is content.
Well, guys, the album's out and it's great. We got to listen to it a little bit before you know, sorry, but it's one of the perks of what we do. Yeah. And, brother, thanks for being here. We can't wait to see you down the road. All right,
thank you guys for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.